in your feed. Yes, indeed. The little podcast that could is in your neck of the woods. We are the Wrestling Podcast. That's WRSTLING. We talk about all the graps without the E. That's not to say that we're anti-E. We're simply pro wrestling. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You have found yourself on the Inside the Ropes podcast network. We really do appreciate you deciding to take a walk in the indie garden with us. My name is Liam. This guy is Gareth.
Hello.
And we've got another fun stacked show to talk about. We're in the US with Major League Wrestling. It's return or the restart to weekly television. And then we're hopping over to Japan to Pro Wrestling Noah for their big show following up from our wonderful interview with Hisame last week. So, without any further ado, let's just jump right into the thick of things. Major League Wrestling, the restart. We've covered two episodes this week. G Diddy, what did you think?
Interesting. Not sure it was firing on all cylinders.
Give me more.
Just some curious choices. If you're for a restart, if you're maybe hoping to get all your returning customers, all your returning fans, but also draw some new eyeballs to the product. I don't know if all the choices they made here were the right ones for new people tuning in.
Yeah, interesting. I got a feeling we're going to be talking about some of the same stuff here. Just a bit of background before we get too far ahead of ourselves. So Major League Wrestling is a US promotion. I would term it one of the challenger promotions. So alongside the likes of Impact, Ring of Honor, the NWA, it's that next tier down perhaps from WWE and then even AEW. It's kind of on that par. It's certainly a fun little promotion though. It's run by a former WWE writer in Court Bauer. He's a very intelligent man. A lot of interesting creative comes out of his mind, I would say. The promotion was actually founded back in 2002 and only ran for 2 years before ceasing operations. And then all of a sudden it was revived between 2017 and 2018. And then live programming, or the weekly programming, started proper in 2018 and has been rolling ever since. You can now find MLW on television networks all over the planet, but most notably for us, YouTube. It's very, very easy to access this sort of programming. Anyway, getting back to the restart. So I think I'm picking up what you're putting down here. I was an MLW fan before the hiatus, so I've kind of come into this on the tide of what they were doing before. But the first episode in particular, a cold start for me, is really odd. So we open the show with, did it go a minute? Maybe not. An absolute evisceration style squash match from a admittedly wonderful wrestler in Alexander Hammerstone, who's the national openweight champion in MLW. He came out, basically just hit his finisher and took this jobber out in relatively short order, and that was kind of it. After that match, we are gearing up for our second match of the evening, which is Myron Reed, who's the MLW middleweight champion, defending against Brian Pillman Jr. And we have like a false start entrance. So, you know, Pillman's music hits, no one comes out. Same again, no one comes out. And then we go to commercial break. So for me, that's a really rough start. It smacks of a timing issue in terms of where the ad breaks presumably fit in. But this is a tape show. These are things they knew about. Why not give the Hammerstone match a little bit longer as opposed to having this weird sort of false start with Pillman just to seemingly fill up time?
I just didn't really understand the need for it. Like you say, might have been a timing thing. They'd said he'd had to cut 15 pounds and then rehydrated back up to 220. So I was like, okay, yep. So he's struggling here. He's low energy. And that's why it's taking him that little bit of extra time.
Which is plausible.
Make it out.
You would have liked to have seen it or seen evidence of it.
Yeah, but then you didn't see any follow-up to that in the match. I thought, you know, maybe he might... I was like, maybe they're going to run an angle where he collapses or something, was my thinking going into that, where they just dropped that tidbit. I was like, oh, you know, maybe this is going to set something up. But there was no follow-up to that. So, yeah, it just left me scratching my head,
and it's interesting,
was unfortunate.
There was a couple of those where things on commentary were said that actually sounded quite interesting or quite intriguing, but they weren't matched with anything that you could see in the show itself. It's almost as if they were booking around what you can actually see. So in the second episode, I noted that the commentary team suggested that there were sort of wealthy businessmen or similar in a private booth somewhere with money on all the matches. Now, why not show that? If that's, you know, there's not a huge amount going on there as a setting. I'm having to dial back my expectations on some of these because, you know, we've had New Japan, USA, Impact, and now I would add MRW to the list of, you know, sort of slightly underwhelming presentation, unfortunately. And again, with, you know, the benefit of quite a few others that have gone before them to work with here. The idea of getting some actors in to look like businessmen who are betting on the matches or what have you, yes, okay, it happened on the first pandemic-ish episode of AEW, but nobody's going to worry about that. That's actually quite an interesting idea. And if they could, you know, make it all seem a little bit dirty and a bit grimy, there's something that can be done there. But instead, it was just something that the commentators surmised, essentially, which was a shame.
So you wouldn't even need to necessarily show any faces there. Slap some nice clothes on some of the other wrestlers in the building. Have it be a smoky room, like cigar smoke, and you don't even need to see faces, and just some close-ups of money changing hands and stuff like that, just to imply it.
Yeah.
And I think you've got something there, like a nice little hook. But I'll tell you something, and I wonder if you'll agree with this. The venue they're running out of, it reminded me of somewhere, which I know you're familiar with. I wonder if you'd hazard a guess.
Go on. You've got me here.
Sarum 76.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God.
So, oh dear. Liam and I, when we were teenagers, used to backyard wrestle, but not actually in a backyard. We rented out a hall of a local nightclub that had, like, mirrors all the along the walls and a bar. And, yeah, just the interior of this venue that MLW are running just reminds me so much of that space.
The R&B room. Oh, my goodness. Maybe they were in the R&B room.
Shout out to the Chapel Nightclub, Salisbury.
They didn't know we were wrestling, so this is news to them. Oh. They just thought we had a birthday party every week. Oh, wow, this is crazy. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But you bang on, you know, if that was like a kind of smoky, you know, really lean into the grime, I'm all for it. But I felt like there was a real production misstep throughout the whole thing. Like, it just looked a bit low rent, and it's a shame because you can see on the replays from previous shows, you know, from before the pandemic, that actually the production values are generally quite good.
I've gone back and watched some of the old Fusion episodes and was super impressed. I think had I come in having not watched that, maybe my expectations wouldn't have been quite so high. But I came in and was like, oh, this is confusing. Like, and they had tried to make it smoky, but again, it just didn't.
No,
it
and, you know, the,
didn't yeah, really work.
This is really nitpicky, but the lighting I thought was off, you know, particularly there was no spot or very little spotlight on the entrance ramp. So that was quite underwhelming, and I just thought the whole thing, unfortunately, looked much less than how I remember MLW, and that was a shame. However, let's move on to the positives, of which there are plenty.
I do just have one more thing to nitpick about,
right,
and then
driver. Yeah. Sorry, if we could just park the positive bus, we're just going to linger here for a little bit longer. Go on, mate. Go on. Tell.
The piped in low hubbub crowd noise, I think, is a misstep because, yes, you've got some crowd noise, but it sounds like a disengaged, disinterested crowd that are, like, talking amongst themselves. They're not enjoying the wrestling.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
The vibe I got.
It's almost as if they got that sound for free, you know, off of a off of one of these kind of white noise, background noise websites. I know what you're saying. So there were a few things here where perhaps the intention was correct, but the execution was far from it, unfortunately. But anyway, all aboard the positivity train. What did you like about these shows?
I think Jacob Fatu is a really great presence and champion. Really enjoyed seeing him, and I think the whole Contra thing, not knowing every sort of inch of the story, seems very interesting. Them as a group. I like the little where their feed breaks into the channel.
Isn't it cool? I mean, that's something that's really unique to MRW. This whole storyline, I think, is really fascinating, and the way they've done it, But I love the Contra stuff, you know. So if you haven't seen Contra, they're the big bad stable in MLW, and they've got Jacob Fatu, who's the current champion, essentially as their leader. But during the layoff, the storyline explanation that MLW offered for why they weren't running shows was that Contra had actually taken over their building, quote unquote, and weren't allowing anybody in. So they'd kind of hijacked MLW headquarters, and as such, they weren't allowed to run shows. So it's little things like that that I actually quite appreciate, you know, them giving a reason as to why things aren't happening. And the trailer for the restart showed all the remaining members of the MLW roster retaking the building, and it's just cool. It's a bit different. I quite liked it. But yeah, I thought that was a decent main event for night one. I did thoroughly enjoy Myron Reed versus Brian Pillman Jr. I think Myron Reed in particular is somebody well worth watching. He's got a lot of upside, I think. And moving on to night two, so we had Richard Holiday, who's a member of the Dynasty, alongside Alexander Hammerstone. They used to have MJF in there as well, and Gino Medina, who was the chap that Holiday had a bit of a discussion with outside. Just on that, you'll notice with MLW, they do a lot of unique things with promos, and a lot of it is sort of seemingly done on a smaller handheld device or a phone or something. And I don't know if that's designed to make it look more realistic or if it's just the restrictions in production sometimes. But I do find it a bit hit and miss, and would like to see a more consistent level of production throughout the show.
Maybe not as glossy as the Impact backstage promos are. But a step up from the...
There's a middle ground somewhere, surely. Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, Holiday, somebody that I quite enjoy. His whole gimmick is that he studied marketing at university. He has a rich father who's also his lawyer. And he's always wearing AirPods and drinking coffee and talking about rarefied air. But he's a fun hand. He's a good talker. And I quite like him in the ring as well. I thought this match with TJP, who... whilst I appreciate the mechanical value of his wrestling, doesn't necessarily engage me in the way that I might perhaps like. I thought this was a perfectly sort of serviceable Same. Match with the right man going over in Holiday.
Definitely. I thought Holiday was stranded in the Caribbean, though. What happened there?
Who the hell knows? That was last week, and all of a sudden he's back.
With no explanation. It was really nice seeing Calvin Tankman make his debut. He's someone who we've seen via GCW. And who I've quite enjoyed, so I'm looking forward to seeing him.
His squash match against Robert Marta. Fantastic. Yeah, that went 1 minute 14, as opposed to the 20-second Hammerstone squash from the week before. And just that extra time made it all the more enjoyable. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a great way to introduce Tankman.
Absolutely. And then I enjoyed his little post-match promo as well.
Me too. Yeah, I thought he came across likable. And then, in the main event of night two, we have what was, in my opinion, a certifiable banger between Filthy Tom Lawler and Rocky Romero. This, if you recall from last week, was the match that I picked out from the bracket of the Opera Cup. And in my opinion, this delivered big time.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. This was great. I'd recommend everybody listening go out and watch this match. It's available for free on YouTube. You know, just look for the most recent episode of Fusion, MLW Fusion, and skip to the last 25 minutes of the show, and I think you'll be very happy.
Tom Lawler's on the tear at the second. You know, he had a fantastic match on New Japan Strong the other week against Fred Rosser, the former Darren Young, and seems to be doing big things wherever he goes. You know, even thinking back to that Bloodsport event, his match of Homicide is, for me, the best match on the card. So
definitely. But that's not to take away from how good of a run I think Rocky Romero has been having during the pandemic.
Preach.
He's been having good matches in New Japan. He had a good match in Ring of Honor, having good matches here. So he's somebody that maybe hasn't been as active before the pandemic, and is just absolutely, every opportunity he's given, I feel like he's knocking it out of the park at the moment.
Yeah, I think he's wildly underrated.
I do think, yeah, people would have kind of forgotten about him, and he's showing why he's been a multi-time champion.
Yeah, without question. And it was so good to see him in a match that had a bit of room to breathe. You know, this one went sort of circa 17 minutes. really did have a good ebb and flow to it. I thought it was great stuff. What was interesting as well, for a long time, Ring of Honor fans will have picked up on this, Rich Bocchini on commentary referenced the old Rocky Romero tag team that he had with Ricky Reyes, the Havana Pitbulls. And it got me thinking, I wonder what Ricky Reyes is up to now. They should reform that tag team. They were great.
Yeah, I have no idea. Like, I can't remember the last time I even really thought about Ricky Reyes.
He was in Lucha Underground for a while.
Interesting.
I think his name was Cortez Castro, I want to say. But I haven't seen him since then. But yeah, man, bring Ricky Reyes back. Let's get the Havana Pitbulls back.
Always room for more tag teams, especially a veteran tag team on the indie scene.
For sure. Okay. Anything else in MLW?
So whilst these weren't two perfect shows, there was still a lot to like here. And I think they're building towards some good stuff. I'm looking forward to upcoming matches. Really looking forward to ACH and Laredo Kid taking place. Mm-hmm. Really looking forward to seeing Leo Rush take on Myron Reed for that middleweight title as well. They did a good job of setting up Hammerstone challenging Fatu down the line. He said he wants Fatu, and you've got this new mystery Contra member that's attacked him. So, you know, he's got that roadblock first. So setting stuff up there. But yeah, a lot to like.
What we're saying basically is they did enough to keep you for at least another a couple more episodes.
I'll stick around as a regular viewer, I think, at least see out the Opera Cup now.
Absolutely. Okay, good stuff. Enjoyed that. We'll be back in a flash talking about Noah the Chronicle, Volume 4, the 20th anniversary show. Stay with us, people, because we move.
And we're back, and we're going to be covering Noah's the Chronicle, Volume 4, which is billed as their 20th anniversary show. So a little bit of background on Noah, or Pro Wrestling Noah, to give them their full title. They were founded in 2000 when 24 of the 26 All Japan Pro Wrestlers left to start a new promotion led by Mitsuharu Misawa, who was the figurehead and where Noah originally took its kind of green and white color scheme from. This was the arc of professional wrestling, taking them away from what they believe was the badly run All Japan Pro Wrestling. Noah, you could argue, was the premier promotion in Japan for the whole of the 2000s. It's hard to argue against that. It's only been in the last few years that New Japan took over, but now owned by Cyberfight, I really feel like Noah are staging quite a comeback. They're rallying, and they've got some really good guys on the roster and building towards something special again.
Indeed, you know, under the Cyberfight banner, alongside the likes of DDT and Tokyo Yoshi Pro, they found a really good home there. And you know, I think we've spoken about this before, but Cyberfight have a nice selection of different types of professional wrestling within their stable, and Noah very much fits the bill of the traditional strong style Japanese wrestling.
Yes, definitely. So, you know, it fills a hole in that wrestling pie that Cyberfight are baking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it's an important slice of that pie.
Yeah, I mean, arguably, it could be the jewel in the crown, couldn't it? It's the traditional element of it. It's the perhaps the most recognisable element of pro wrestling. So,
but it's the big time element as well, isn't it? You know, they're considered major, whereas
for sure,
everything else on that is more indie.
So says our man Takesta, friend of the podcast.
This show was an 8-match card, and I think like a lot of the shows we talked about recently, it really was a show of two halves. So the second half, which is the four title matches, I thought were all super strong. And the opening four felt fun but forgettable.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Definitely. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of this, I wanted to ask you, do you think that Pro Wrestling Noah has a slight image issue in that so much of its roster appears to be of a particular vintage? Quite a lot of guys that I would argue are over their best, or some twilight of their careers is perhaps a bit strong, but certainly it's not a youthful roster, I wouldn't say.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that they use that have got less days wrestling ahead of them than they've got behind them.
Yeah, and you know, it's not to say that they're not good or they can't go, far from it. I mean, there's some really, really good cases to look at in the Noah roster of guys that are incredibly experienced and still bring the goods. But I just wonder if it might be slightly off-putting, because I'm guessing that a new fan to Noah may have sampled New Japan first, and while their roster isn't brimming with spring chickens, it certainly has a younger look and feel in comparison to this, in my opinion anyway.
Absolutely, and I think prime example of that on this card was the Segura Gun match against the Congo team. So that was comprised of Fujita, Kendo Kishin, and Nosawa beating what I thought was a really like good upcoming team of Soya, Kitamiya, and Nayo. And yeah, it just really felt like the wrong team went over there. Bunch of old dudes beating this, you know, a couple of powerhouses.
Yeah, it's a curious one, isn't it? I do wonder if that slightly holds Noah back in the eyes of some fans.
Possibly. It's tough to say, isn't it? All I can say is from my perspective, it did rub me the wrong way because I really like those Congo boys.
Yeah, Congo are awesome. So they're quite a large stable in Noah. They're all clad in red. They look pretty badass. And they all have these really structured poses that they do when they come into the ring, which is quite exciting. But the leader is Kenno, who we'll talk about a bit later on, but he's fantastic. So yeah, lots of good stuff with them.
Really enjoy them as a unit. So maybe let's jump to speaking about that GHC national title match, which was Kenno taking on Kaito Kiyomiya, which I really, really enjoyed.
Mm.
I just think the presentation of both men is great. It feels like they're two people who are the future of Noah.
I think in Kenno's case in particular, Hisame's Twitter account gives you a real insight into his character and kind of builds things that you might not necessarily pick up from just watching the product itself. You know, in that he's apparently incredibly paranoid and thinks everybody's out to get him. And I suppose you can see it on his face once you have that little bit of context to work
with. It's interesting.
Yeah. It's well worth having a read through, but much like the DDT English Update account, it's a great one to have open on your laptop or your phone whilst you're watching the show.
Speaking of both men having a good look, I really enjoyed the visual at the start of the match of Congo all in red, Kenno with the red belt on one side of the ring, and you've got Kiyomiya all alone on the other side of the ring.
Yeah, definitely. I think Noah are really good at that, creating strong visuals. You know, you think back to the Fujita-Go-Shizaki match where they had the 30-minute stare down, and I appreciate that's not to everyone's taste, but it was structured so perfectly. It was real theatre, you know, where you had Go standing above the logo or over the Noah logo, defending it, seemingly, against an opponent who was considered the last student of Enochism, so the sort of opposite to Noah. So there was a whole bunch of story, even when the guys weren't moving. And I think it's something that they really major on.
Yeah, that does seem to be one of the selling points of Noah for me, is that when their storytelling is on point, it seems really untouchable.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Kiyomiya, I really, really like, and we've said this about Ueno in DDT, but he's another one that has a slight flavour of Kota Ibushi about him, I think.
Yeah, he's got a really strong look. He's got some great high-flying offence as well. Mm. You know, it was really his speed in this match that allowed him to kind of make his comebacks.
Yeah, for sure. And it was a really good visual as well, because he was trapped in a sleeper for the finish of the match, and you could see in his eyes he was desperate to find a way out but just couldn't. And then the realization of having to tap out to this man, a bitter rival, was really well done. You know, really effective storytelling.
I thought his facial expressions when he was in that sleeper hold were phenomenal. He looked so scared, I thought.
Yeah, and it's interesting as well, because he dropped a big singles match earlier in the year to Keiji Muto as well, so you wonder if there's a bit of a story being developed here.
For me as well, it was what cost him this match was he went to the well once too often with the Tiger Suplex.
Yes. Yeah.
So that was his third attempt that Kenno reversed into this sleeper hold that finally put him down. He'd had it reversed the first time, he'd hit it the second, and then tried to hit it once more, and it was, game over.
Although I must say, there's nothing I enjoy more than a perfectly executed bridging tiger suplex. It's a really pretty move, isn't it?
It's one of the best ones. Like,
I would think so.
I struggle to think of a nicer looking, well-executed suplex.
I love a tabletop suplex, you know, like the fall-away slam. Mm-hmm.
I think
that's a nice one.
That's another one that I'm really high on as well. Yeah. I like the regal plex as well when that's done. When that's done well, That looks really interesting.
I really love a capture suplex, you know, like the one that Taz used to do where the leg ends up on his shoulder, basically. And in fact, we were even treated to one a bit later on in the show, but we'll get to that.
It was about a perfect 20-minute match as you're going to get, I think.
Yeah, I would say so.
No dead air, both men dropping bombs, beautiful offense. Not a bad word to say about this match.
Nope. Good stuff, really good stuff.
If it hadn't been on a card with the main event here, you're obviously going to make that comparison. I think, speaking of rarefied air earlier, that match was definitely breathing rarefied air. It was a hell of a match.
Yes, it was. Absolutely.
So let's move on to the GHC heavyweight title match. So just for those of you that maybe don't know, GHC stands for Global Honored Crown, which I believe is ostensibly like the governing body of NOAH.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. That's interesting.
The reigning champion, Go Shiozaki, defending against the winner of the N1 Victory 2020 tournament, Katsuhiko Nakajima, in a hell of a match.
Dear Lord. Dear Lord. Honestly, right, okay. Let's just set the scene here, because I thought our guest last week did a wonderful job at this, but watching the match unfold, this thing was a complete story of two former friends, former tag team partners, that essentially had a duel where they had one weapon of choice each. Shiozaki had his Kobashi-inherited thunderclap chops to the chest, and Nakajima had these pinpoint accurate, just chest flattening kicks, and they went at it tooth and nail with those two weapons in what I think was possibly the most realistic wrestling match in terms of the strikes thrown. It felt like a fight. I've just never seen anything like this. This is about as strong style as it gets. Just a mind-blowing, brutal match.
One of the things that struck me about this as well when I was watching it is obviously the colour schemes of both men.
Yes.
So you've got Go, who wears the green, you know, the Misawa green, mm-hmm. which you also associate with original NOAH. And then you've got Nakajima, all in red, part of Congo, and red is the color of present day NOAH. So it felt like almost like a match for the soul of NOAH as well as the title.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, you got Go, that is that bridge between past and present. Is it going to be a passing of the torch to the new wave of NOAH?
And this is what we were talking about earlier. They do tell these stories that they're great with imagery like that. So yeah, 100%. Man, this was a brutal match. I don't think I've ever seen a match that made me wince so much. I mean, this one went over 40 minutes and had a lot. It was very much what I would describe as a traditional NOAH main event, in that it was quite methodically paced but kind of picked up where it needed to. It was incredibly hard hitting. The selling was just out of this world. You know, both men looked dead. Maybe they weren't selling, maybe they were just dead because they were sure hitting each other hard.
Well, and Go is more tape than man at this point.
He really is. He needs a sponsorship deal with some sort of Gorilla Tape or something like that. He'd do just fine.
For such a long match, there were no dead spots. Yeah. It really felt I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. Yeah. Just from the word go, okay. Just it felt like both of them were being really cautious, sort of feeling each other out. A few early exploratory kicks from Nakajima. And it felt like it took a really long time until they went into the ropes for them to really make eye contact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they hadn't really looked at each other until that point.
Yeah, the emotion of this one was really kind of jumping off the screen, wasn't it?
And then you just got a big old stare down between the two. Luckily not for half an hour.
I would have been happy. I love that.
Then Go manages to get the first real advantage of the match with some of those trademark chops.
Oh man, those chops are so hard. Does anybody chop harder than Go Shiozaki? Just, you know, when we got into the strong style exchanges, a chop from Shiozaki and a kick to the chest from Nakajima, and with the relative quiet of the Japanese audience, who would sort of wait to a break in proceedings before applauding, this really reminded me of watching a tennis match, or rather listening to a tennis match, because the thud from each shot was just massive, and then you just have this tiny break and then another one. It was just sheer brutality.
So as referenced earlier, we see Go hits a capture suplex off the apron, which just looked real, just no fun for poor Nakajima.
He killed the man.
I do enjoy a bit of outside action, and it's rare you see somebody get chucked quite like that off an apron.
Yeah, 100%. It looked absolutely sickening.
Later on during this war, one thing that I really enjoyed that you don't see very often is both men had been getting counted out. Go had gotten back in the ring and Nakajima was still outside. It looked like he was going to roll back in the ring on an 18, but fails. Like, he doesn't have the energy and he falls back to the floor. And it legit makes you think, oh, crap, we could maybe have a count out here. And then he gets back up and in just before the count of 20. Yeah. And it just wrung every last drop of drama out of, you know, what is usually, especially in a big title match like this, you think, oh, there's no way there'll be a count out here.
No, I bit on it. I really did. I bit on that. It was really well done. Yeah, there's so much drama here. One other thing that I absolutely loved from Nakajima was in one of the, I think it was perhaps one of the latter strong style exchanges, when he was the first man to blink, if you like, you know, when they were trading shots, and one of those chops just went right through him and he kind of stuttered or faltered, and you could hear it in the crowd. It really resonated. Everyone was like, oh, got it. You know, he's the one that's dipped here. And it was just really well done. I just thought, this is so well executed, this whole thing.
Another little something that we saw in another match recently is you had Go was potentially out, but you had Nakajima push the ref off to carry on.
Oh.
So he could have potentially had the match won by knockout there, but decided he wanted to keep putting a beating on Go.
And those shots looked brutal as well.
Yeah, he went
mount position, big forearms, kept shoving the referee away, and it looked genuine. It looked absolutely horrific.
He did look really glassy-eyed, and he just wasn't competently defending himself. You know, like, he wasn't doing anything. He was just absorbing these strikes. So in MMA, obviously, that match would have been waved off.
Mm.
But, you know, it kept going. And to Nakajima's detriment, his hubris got the better of him, I think.
Yeah, nice to see busting out some of his flashier offense. So we had not one, but two moonsaults, or as I like to call them, go salts. One was successful.
Or moonsaults.
Moonsaults. A recurring typo, unfortunately. Much like the dorp kick. yeah, I thought that was really impressive. You know, for a man of his size, he's very graceful. Also, the go flasher, which is a move that I absolutely love. It's got a hilarious name. But it's a really cool looking move where it's like a suplex into a uranagi. Very cool. Only got a two count here, though. But what this one came down to in the end was just grit. And in the end, he essentially outlasted Nakajima and just was blasting him with lariat after lariat after lariat, and until essentially he just couldn't answer the count.
On the fourth lariat, he finally puts Nakajima down, much to my surprise.
Yeah, same.
Really expecting Nakajima to win the belt here.
Yeah, same. Because, you know, I adore Go Shiozaki, and I've always had a bit of a soft spot for him. And I think in this role as the sort of protector of Noah, or what Noah used to be, he's really excelling, and he looks and feels like a star with his get-up and everything. But as you alluded to earlier, you know, he's a good 60% duct tape at this point in terms of all the injuries that he suffered. I read a tweet from Hisame that suggested that he's no longer able to drive because the position of holding the steering wheel is too painful in his elbows where he's doing all those chops all the time. I don't know if that's true, if that's kayfabe. She'd be able to tell us. But, you know, he looks like he could use a holiday. But sure enough, he's sticking around and he's going to keep defending.
His next title defense is going to be December 6th.
Okay.
Defending against Segura.
Oh, that'd be a nice easy one.
So, you know,
this poor guy.
Post-match here, they set up that, as well as Kenno versus co-tag team champion Kazushi Sakuraba.
Sakuraba, the goddamn Gracie Hunter? Are you kidding me? Are you familiar with this man?
I believe you've told me about this before, but do go on.
Well, no, so this is, you might be thinking of Shinya Aoki, who we talked about in DDT.
Yeah, I think maybe you're right.
But this is yet another MMA legend. But this man used to hunt Gracies, you know, as in the legendary Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu family. Most famously, Royce Gracie is the main guy. But Sakuraba used to pick Gracies off for fun back in the day. You know, he was an MMA legend. So crazy to see him here in Pro Wrestling Noah, but, you know, awesome.
So are we going to see Segura Goon double champs?
No, I don't think we are. I'd be surprised. I feel like if Go's going to drop it, it should be to either Kenno, Kiyomiya, or in a rematch to Nakajima. Those four men really feel like the guys that are going to carry Noah into the future on this sort of wave of cyber fight.
Definitely.
Support. So I'd like it to be one of those. So I'd be surprised. That said, though, Segura is really good value still. I mean, I know he's in advanced years, but he's jacked to the gills. He's still a really exciting wrestler to watch. He had some great matches in the M1, so I wouldn't be averse to him winning, that's for sure.
Well, we've got that to look forward to December 6th, then. We'll have to report back on our thoughts there.
Where do you think this one stands in terms of match of the year rankings?
Of what I've seen this year, I do think the main event here is probably going to settle somewhere definitely in the top 10, if not the top 5. But yeah, I'm going to have to really stop and think about this. Maybe this is something we should both do, is compile our matches of the year and talk about it on the last show of 2020, perhaps.
I like your thinking. Let's do that.
For you, where does this one sit, do you think?
I don't know that I have an answer, to be honest with you. So I think I'm struggling to think of a better one. Well, okay, so Suzuki and Ibushi was really good.
It's hard, isn't it, though, because of recency bias, you know?
It is hard because of recency bias.
I think, give us the distance between now and the last episode of the year, and I think we'll have settled on something. So make sure you join us Christmas Day, of all days, to hear Liam and I go through our matches of the year. On the final episode of the Wrestling Podcast of 2020. But before then, the news.
And we're back with the news. Let's get straight into it with Ring of Honor, ROH. They have announced Final Battle, the next pay-per-view, which will be live on December 18th. Every single Ring of Honor title will be on the line, which means Jonathan Gresham will be wrestling twice, defending both his ROH Pure Championship and the ROH Tag Team titles, which he holds with Jay Lethal. Interesting stuff. ROH World Champion Roosh, Television Champion Dragon Lee, and the six-man Tag Team Champions of Bandido, Flamita, and Rey Horus will also be making defenses. Tony Deppen, who we chatted about earlier in the series when he wrestled for GCW, will indeed be in action also at Final Battle. And something really cool that happened this past week on Ring of Honor TV, which if you haven't been watching, I'd encourage you to do, because they're kicking out a really good product at the second. But Mike Bennett returned to the promotion, helping out his old Kingdom stablemate Matt Taven against Vincent and Bateman. So great to see Mike Bennett back in ROH. I really hope he gets a good run there and a supportive environment that actually allows him to express himself a little bit more than he was able to do elsewhere. So good stuff.
And then over in Impact, Jazz's retirement was very short-lived, as she's been announced that she's going to be Jordan Grace's tag team partner in this Knockout Tag Team title tournament.
That's great stuff. I'm jazzed for that.
We mentioned a few weeks ago that we'd said she was retired, and pleased to have her back.
Very much so.
Shortest retirement in wrestling history.
Ooh, I don't know. Terry Funk will have a thing or two to say about that.
We've also got Alex Shelley returning from injury this week. Woo! Coming on Impact. So we're glad to have him back. He's been missed. And then straight out of the NWA,
yes,
we've had news that they're coming back with NWA Shockwave, which is going to be starting this Tuesday night on YouTube.
Interesting stuff. Okay, heading back to pro wrestling, Noah. So the next big card has been announced for December 6th. As Gareth alluded to, Go Shizaki will be defending the GHC Heavyweight Crown against Takashi Segura. Marufuji, Keiji Mutu, Masakatsu Funaki, Yoko Miyamoto are going to be teaming up to take on the team of Kaito Kiyomiya, Shohei Taniguchi, Daiki Inaniba, and Yoshiiki Inamura. Kenno is going to be defending against the Gracie Hunter himself, Sakuraba. Yoshinori Ogawa and Hayata are going to be defending their GHC Junior Tag Team belts against Kotaro Suzuki and Salve de Oriente. Hajime Ohara, Yohei, and Seiki Yoshioka will be competing against the Kenno team of Katsuhiko Nakajima, Masa Kitamiya, and Manabu Soya. And also Daisuke Harada, Atsushi Kotoji, and Junta Miyawaki are going to be going up against Tatsuke, Hao, and Neo. And then finally in the opener, Kinya Okada will be taking on Yasutaka Yano. That's the full lineup.
So lots to look forward to there, I think.
Yep, and lots of names that I've butchered, so apologies.
I always leave the reading of full Japanese wrestling cards to you, yeah. So I can I dip on that one. I'm like, nope.
Yeah, I got halfway through that and sensed the stitch up. Yeah, the spider sense failed me there. It's bad.
Over in with our friends DDT. So some sad news: the Dio Grand Prix is underway. That's not the sad news. That's excellent news.
That's great news.
The sad news is Daisuke Sasaki has gone down to a broken rib. So that means he's going to be out of the tournament, and that means all of his future opponents are going to receive an automatic 2 points. We're wishing Sasuke a speedy recovery.
Yeah, get well soon.
In some other more fun news, President Takagi made his first defense of his Extreme Championship this last week against Shunma Katsumata in a Super Sento Hardcore Anywhere Full match.
Amazing.
Just basically him defending the belt in a bathhouse.
Perfect.
So
he's a wild man.
So I think, as we said at the time, he's all of his defenses are going to be on YouTube. So that match is available now. We'll tweet it out at some point.
Amazing.
Well worth a watch.
And do let us know what you think as well. Okay, and going down to Mexico, AAA, our good pals at Lucha Blog, wonderful resource also on Twitter, so do check them out for all things Lucha. They're reporting then Triple Mania is going to be taking place on December 12th at Arena Ciudad de Mexico. So there's going to be a press conference on Monday from AAA to announce things officially. So hopefully we'll know more then. That's an interesting one, because I know that was all dependent on the infection rate going to a particular color. I think there's a color system in Mexico. Not aware that they've hit the required color, to be honest with you. So it'll be really intriguing to see what they say. But there we go.
Definitely. You know, and there'd been talk that it was going to happen on Boxing Day, this show, but that got shot down.
Yeah. Okay.
So it'd be good to have some official confirmation.
Yep.
One
absolutely.
Way or the other. And lastly, over in GCW, they tweeted out this week that their event scheduled for the 5th of December to take place in Las Vegas has been postponed, and they're going to refund all the tickets. The show's still going to be taking place, but moving to their performance center with no spectators, and it's going to be airing live on IWTV. So really good news from my perspective. We talked about this when we covered GCW previously, that I thought due to the sort of current spike in America that this was probably for the best.
And so I think that pretty much does it for this episode of the Wrestling Podcast. So what can we do in the meantime between now and next week, where we're going to be covering the aforementioned NWA Shockwave show, and we're also going to be speaking to Choco Pro's Balianaki in an exclusive interview. In the meantime, however, why not give us a follow? We're up on Twitter and Instagram, and it's at Wrestling Pod. That's wrestling without the E. You want to send us an email, maybe give us some matches or some promotions that we're not yet following. Give us some tips. Come on. We're at wrestlingpod@gmail.com. Do check us out on itrwrestling.com. And if you're looking for something to hold in your hands, to grasp and feel, why not check out the magazine, insidetheropesmagazine.com. Anyway, thanks so much for spending your time with us. As always, we really do appreciate it. It means the world. And until next time, stay happy, stay safe, and enjoy the graps.